This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. Now to the time my late grandfather was once mentioned in the New York Times. It's one paragraph from way back in 1972. Hi Fleischer owned a bar in the Sunset Park section of Brooklyn, New York. The paper mentions Grandpa Hi noticing something weird. Business cards from real estate speculators showering that increasingly dilapidated neighborhood. No one knew why. Well, mystery solved, the cards were part of a crooked real estate scheme involving property speculators, home appraisers, even officers of a Wall Street credit ratings agency. Longtime residents were persuaded to sell cheap. Then their homes were sold on to low-income buyers at inflated prices. Many buyers couldn't handle the overpriced properties, which were then abandoned. The predators would pocket the federal insurance on the loans. It led to a flurry of indictments. There are echoes of the scandal today, both in Brooklyn and in cities around the country. The building's still here, but my grandfather's bar is long gone. It's now Charlie's, where they fix up and sell used appliances. I'm standing among the fridges and ovens, close to the spot where Grandpa Hi and his apron used to pull drafts of Ballantine beer. An urban revitalization strategist and MacArthur Award winner agreed to meet me here.
Majora Carter, good to see you.
Good to see you too, David, as always.
You got to look at that New York Times article from all those years ago. It's almost 50 years.
Unfortunately, it felt like it was written yesterday.
It's a complicated story, but if we boil it down a bit into steps, step number one was that there were residents here who were told the neighborhood is changing, and they were nervous, right? And then what happens in that situation?
They sell early and cheap.
They sell cheap. So there was someone wanting to buy up property here in Sunset Park.
Yeah, and understanding that playing on the fears of folks, you know, who are looking at their asset, this American dream, like literally just go to pot, and they think that's the case. And of course, like, that's, unfortunately, our history is filled with so many of those examples that it just really does, like, count on people, like, not understanding the value in their own community and other folks preying upon that.
So in this neighborhood, some people sold cheap. And then a real estate speculator bought cheap and then was able to find a buyer for the property, but at inflated values in many cases. They would put a little paint up or not put a little paint up and say, this isn't worth $5,000 like the last person who sold it. It's worth $25,000. So someone would come in with the promise of home ownership in America.
And people would look at that promise and go, wow, that's for me too, and I could finally actually participate in that. But it was all a bit of a scam. And unfortunately, we still see that to this day. But that one from that article was something that, yeah, I don't think I was prepared to read that.
So maybe the person bought, maybe they could just afford this mortgage. It was subsidized by the government. In fact, it was guaranteed. And they get the house, and it turns out, no, the electricity wasn't upgraded. No, the plumbing needed a lot of work. They might not have had the money to do the upkeep.
And they usually didn't. But could you imagine just how people were feeling? You know, they bought into this thing thinking that it was just the next best thing for their families, and then realizing that they'd been had. I can't even imagine what it felt like to folks who were just like, no, I'm a part of this American dream thing, and then all of a sudden I don't have it, and I feel stupid. And I think that, unfortunately, is the way a lot of folks, you know, who are not a part of that, you know, the folks who are running those scams and who are personally and professionally benefiting from it, they weren't the little guys.
So if they couldn't keep up the payments, they often had to abandon the property. They were foreclosed upon.
Mm-hmm.
And then in this special case, because there were special federal programs at work, the lender was able to recoup the money from the feds, but then the property would just lay fallow.
Yeah, the lender was able to recoup the property, the broker that they worked with. There was everybody got a little bit of it, except for the person who was trying to build some generational wealth for their family. And those levels, I think, of corruption and the scale at which it went through were the kind of things I think we need to, like, recognize still happen, and that it's never really designed to support the people who actually benefit from having generational wealth in their families. And we've seen it, you know, from, you know, immigrants of all colors getting, we're definitely still seeing it for, you know, black and brown folks who are still looking at this right now. I mean, the 2008 crisis disproportionately impacted black and brown folks in the same kind of way. The banks were too big to fail. But we lost so much, so many assets, so much generational wealth in the Black community and general communities of color, and actually all colors. But it's just troubling that we're not learning from the mistakes that we saw happening that were actually supported, you know, by the federal government.
When the New York Times reporter comes here, residents don't even know why the neighborhood was in, quote, decline. They didn't understand they were part of this system that was being used to exploit some people.
And the system, I think, was malicious. There was a lot of malicious intent involved that was literally preying on people not knowing that. It's like using ignorance in a way that was benefiting folks who didn't. They were benefiting the folks who were most able to do the most harm to other folks.
Some people had little bits and pieces of this. It was hard to piece together. My grandfather's only role, one paragraph in this extended investigative piece by the Times, was that he had noticed a lot of business cards being left by property speculators around his bar and in the neighborhood looking for business. And he was always curious, why are all these property speculators trying to do business in this neighborhood? He didn't see the connection.
Wow. And that's unfortunately, once you start seeing those cards, it's almost too late. You know, I mean, we've certainly seen, I own a cafe up in the South Bronx, and, you know, it's one of the only locally owned places up there, you know, that's a public third space. And guess what? When we first opened, we were already seeing those, not even business cards. These were just the folks who were running these, you know, were buying up the properties and fixing and flipping them. And then we just asked like a lot of questions of folks, and we realized that's why we need to be very mindful. You know, the train may have left the station, but there is still room, I think, for those of us in communities like that to decide that we want to buy and hold and or keep the wealth that's generated in our own community, and so that we're the ones benefiting, you know, from whatever changes we're seeing in our neighborhood. And I don't think that that's the kind of story that often gets told or even pushed out there, whether it's our electeds or certainly many of the nonprofits in the communities who may have some inkling of this, but are not really sharing it. Because I feel like, especially as the neighbors, quote unquote, change, what we're seeing is folks deciding that poverty in those neighborhoods, that's part of the cultural attribute. And so we're going to play to that versus, you know, wait a second, we've got people here who own property or who could if given opportunities to do so. And how do we sort of support and then retain that asset, you know, within our own communities? And I feel like that's not, we're still not seeing that happen. The same way that your grandfather, you know, kind of got like little inklings and just in the form of like little pieces of paper, you know, littered over his bar. You know, we've been seeing, you know, little inklings of that as well, whether it's a large amount of subsidized affordable housing being built, which we know the subsidies, those aren't supporting people in the community. They are supporting the developers, you know, who decide to do just that, which also continues to concentrate the poverty in the community. And the rest of the system that says that it's okay to profit off of different real estate trends that support not the people that are ultimately going to live in those communities, but everybody else who basically gets paid off as a result of it. And not even paid off because it's totally legal. Gross.
And it's just a practical point here, but it's an important one. And you make the point in your book, if people fully understood the actual value of the property they have, they wouldn't sell cheap. And that would increase the chances that you retain people in the neighborhood.
Absolutely. And it is the whole point of what we're talking about. It's like recognizing that if given an opportunity to understand what's going on, people everywhere will actually respond to that. But if you keep telling people and showing them that somehow or another their communities don't matter, that there's no real value there, then essentially what we're doing is pulling the wool over their eyes and not giving them the benefit of the doubt that they could actually create, you know, wealth within their own community that benefits them. And it's always going to be this thing where we're playing out this idea that poverty, you know, of both economics as well as of the mind are things that happen in some places. And you know what? Somebody else is going to do better as a result of it. So let somebody else do that.
Majora Carter, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.